Good morning. I'd like to bring this meeting of House Education to order. Today is Wednesday, April 14th, and it's 8:05, and present are Representative Keller, Representative Wilson, Representative Edgman, Representative Book, Representative Munoz is excused. And remind everybody about their cell phones. And today we are going to be talking about advisory and advocate programs in the schools. And we are looking at having a research project over the summer, looking at the effectiveness of advisory programs throughout the state of Alaska as well as the nation, and how those influence graduation rates and participation in, and not only participation but active engagement of students in schools all the way from elementary through college. So that will be the main topic today, but first we had some things on the foundation formula. So Mr. Jeans, would you come forward? And it looks like rocking chair Eddie to me.
I like it.
So, on behalf of the Education Committee here, and I know the Education Committee on the other side as well, we just really appreciate all the expertise and everything that you have given to us in the past. And Senator Davis, would you like to join us up here? And we've been joined by Senator Meyer. You want to just pull a chair up?
I'll just stand. Thank you.
Got one here.
So.
Can I have your chair, please?
Oh, go ahead.
Thanks. Thank you.
And welcome to Senator Meyer and Senator Davis joining us on this occasion. And we would like to, at this time, present Mr. Jeans with a citation, and I'll read that from the legislature. And this is honoring Eddie Jeans, a 30-year state employee. The 26th Alaska State Legislature is proud to honor Juneau resident, dedicated father, and director of school finance, Eddie Jeans, for his 30 years of service to the state of Alaska. Mr. Jeans is a positive example of a state employee who worked his way up through the ranks on the basis of merit. He exemplifies the truth that a career, like an education in life, is what you make out of it. Mr. Jeans began his state career in 1980 as a clerk two, and then as an accounting clerk one and two in the Department of Health and Social Services. He continued as an accounting clerk two for the Department of Education and Early Development in 1982. He advanced to become an accounting technician one and two, a project assistant, a school finance specialist three, school finance manager, and since August 2004, the director of school finance and facilities division. In the later capacity, Mr. Jeans oversees the large and complicated budgetary items and issues of great significance to the people of Alaska, the funding of our school programs and buildings. Mr. Jeans has earned the respect of legislators for knowledgeable, reliable, and forthright testimony delivered with his characteristic good nature. He is consistently sought out for his expert opinions and creative problem-solving abilities on behalf of the schools, school districts, the legislatures, and the children of Alaska. Mr. Jeans represents the best qualities of an Alaska public servant. He enjoys his job, he does it well. He displays an exemplary work ethic, and only when he is out on his boat fishing does Mr. Jean take five. The members of the 26th Alaska Legislature are proud of Mr. Eddie Jean's dedication and lengthy service and wish him continued success and full shrimp pots. And from myself, Mr. Jean's, thank you so much for all the work you've done. You've been a great resource and have provided us all an education. So are there other members that would like to speak? Representative Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Three words, Eddie. Don't quit yet. I just want to say that I've known Eddie since my first year down here in 89. I think we've even played on a basketball team or two and done things like that outside of the building. And, you know, in the often fast-paced, chaotic, sometimes, well, not sometimes, most times, confusing world that we live in down here in the legislature, to have a go-to guy in an agency, as we all know, is such an incredible asset to those of us here in the legislature. And I can think of a few others around the agencies, but Eddie, I think you're definitely at the top of the list and really appreciate all your years of service.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eddie, I'm sure Eddie can remember this, but 10 years ago when I first got in here, I would really fire some questions at Eddie, and he would just in the best way, with a smile on his face, come forth with some of the answers that he probably wasn't used to hearing for quite some time. And so he's always, no matter what's happened, he has really educated me in a lot of things with education, and it really helps us to have that input so that we learn and can do the jobs that we do. You've done a great job, and thank you.
Thank you.
And if you can't tell from the back, he's already rocking. Or maybe it's called gliding. Senator Meyer.
Well, thank you, Representative Seaton. And Eddie, we're really going to miss you. I mean, I've the 10 years I've been here, I've been involved with education one way or another, either as the chairman of this budget subcommittee, which, of course, are never easy, or now as the education co-chairman. And I've always enjoyed working with you. And as you know, education is one of those very emotional issues to all of us. And you do a great job of presenting the material and meeting with us on a very calm manner, so that even though we're frazzled, you kind of keep us back to reality. But what I really like about you is that you have a way of telling me and others that we're crazy, and that idea is the dumbest thing in the world. But you do it so nicely, so that we don't feel so bad and that we asked. And I really appreciate that. It's a very unique talent. You have a lot of knowledge there, and this is going to be quite the brain drain for us to lose you.
This is 30 years.
You're not leaving. Okay.
We're not intending to push Eddie out at all here.
We're just celebrating 30 years.
We're just about celebrating 30 years.
Great. Well, I agree then. Don't leave yet.
Are there further comments?
I'd like to say a couple
Senator
words
Davis.
Here. You have your 30 years, and I know that, you know, there are other good things out there for you, but I hate to see you leave the department. You've been so helpful throughout the years that I've known you, and I know you from way back, even before I was here in the legislature. I served on the Board of Education and served on the school board, had some contact with you. It's going to be different. I know that whoever takes your job is probably prepared for the job, but we still will miss you, and I hope that you will stay in touch and let us know how you're doing on your second level, because there will be something else. You won't be happy just fishing in the boat. You'll want to go somewhere else, and stay in touch and hope to see you around.
Thank you, Senator Davis. And back here in the audience, I have two young ladies that are my daughters, Jordan and Tess. Would you guys
come
stand up?
Come on.
They're both, one's a junior and one's a freshman, so they have a couple more years of school, so I will be here in Juneau. I will be around. I do plan on retiring sometime this summer, but...
Oh, really?
Yes. Well, retiring from the department, that doesn't mean I'm going to go away.
We hope not.
I really enjoy working with the legislature, so I plan on continuing to be around in some capacity.
Excellent. Well, we're sure glad to hear that you'll be around, and welcome to your daughters.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Benjamin.
We do have time left in the session for one more tutorial on the foundation form, don't we?
One last. I'll get you some shrimp.
So, Eddie, let me present this to you.
Let's all stand.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for
having
us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Paul. Oh, you've got resources too.
Yeah. Okay. In a little while. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. So what we're going to take up now is the discussion on the advisor and advocate programs across the state. This is towards the end of the session, so there's a lot of people that have to go to other meetings. There's three concurrent meetings scheduled here that have some of the same committee members. But what we had today was a discussion with Thunder Mountain High School staff on student advisory program at the Juneau High School. We have the Kenai Peninsula High School District program. There's Kodiak Island Borough School District. And we have Cynthia Curran, also Director of Teaching and Learning Support, that can give us an update on the committee work on the graduation working group, specifically aligned to what their discussions were and what's moving forward for the investigation of that from their standpoint. And so we heard from the graduation working group earlier, so we'll take them last. But what we wanted to do, and again, talking about going forward, one of the things that we have identified from the not only the literature, but from some of the testimony across the state, was that the most workable and the thing that was most effective in many schools of increasing graduation and engagement was advisor programs. And so wanted to bring this forward so we could get questions from the committee, so that as this research project goes forward over the summer, we'll be able to address those specific questions as well as the general ones we have. So let's start with is the Thunder Mountain hi, folks. Are they here? Yes. Would you come forward? I'm sorry, I don't have your name on the list.
Sure.
And Brett, if you just sit there, and then if you go ahead with your unless you think you're retiring and you need to.
You know, from here.
And would you identify yourself and who you represent for the record?
Sure. My name is Cassidy Herding. I'm an English teacher at Thunder Mountain High School.
Great. And was it Kathleen?
Cassidy. It's C-A-S-A-D-Y. And herding like herding cattle.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Cassidy. And can you just briefly give us an overview of the program that you have there?
Sure. Keeping in mind that Thunder Mountain is in its second year of a three-year transition, and that the advisory program is kind of new to Juneau under the Next Generation Plan, I know that in Juneau we began, started an advisory program at JDHS about 6 years ago, but it was under the leadership of an interim principal, and it seemed more like a mandate, and we didn't have the staff support. And so even coming to Thunder Mountain, there was a little bit of a history there where it had been taken up and then dropped, and it was hard to tell how it ever could have been successful. What's exciting about being at Thunder Mountain is our whole staff is invested in the leadership, the advisory program, which I think is essential for a successful advisory or mentoring program like that. We are one of the things that we are working on this semester as a whole staff in our during our professional development time is to devise some school-wide agreements about what we want an advisory to do, because advisory structures vary and can all be very successful but can have very different goals. The primary goals are usually connections, like building relationships among students and between teachers and students in a way that's not based on subject-specific academics. It's also academic support. A lot of schools that have had professional learning communities in place recognize that some students just need more time, and so that an advisory can be an academic enrichment time. Another goal is for active mentoring, where a teacher would really get to know a cohort of students well, would be very familiar with their future goals, would understand some of the barriers in place for those students to achieve those goals, and would be seeking out opportunities to find additional courses or recommendations for job shadowing or some of those kind of individual and real personalized connections. It also would be an opportunity for some mentoring, for students to be aligned with a teacher who's actually in their future field of interest. So you can see that it's hard to do all of those things all the time, and why it's up to a staff to really hone its focus and decide what do our students need, and how will we make sure that the advisory is a support system. So at Thunder Mountain last year, just to give a brief idea of what our specific academy did, we were an academy of four core subject area teachers plus one elective music, an elective person who rotated through from the fine arts or from like the culinary arts. And during a 10-week period, students rotated among the five of us teachers, spending 2 weeks with each teacher. And we did a lot of kind of professional future goal setting. One two-week session is they were writing their resumes and cover letters. One session was interview techniques. One session was interview skills. One session was completing job applications, and that instructor brought in several guest speakers from the community, businesses that employ our teenagers, and said, here's what they look for their job applicants. And so it's a chance to do some things and touch with a lot of students on some important future goals in a way that you can't do in a subject-specific class. We also had a pretty intensive project that we had students do that had components from all four subject areas, math, science, history, and English. And that advisory period became project time, where students could get together and work on projects and touch base with the individual teachers where they needed to be doing that work. We've really used that time in a valuable way, and what I'm excited about doing for next year as we continue to transition at Thunder Mountain is to have a more cohesive sense of what we want advisories to do. At this point, the freshman SLCs are teaming, and so that there's a sense of consistency. They do a lot of team building. We want students to feel safe. We want students to feel connected. We want everybody to feel like there's an advocate for them, and that really happens a lot at the freshman level.
Freshman SLC.
Oh, sorry, small learning communities. At Thunder Mountain, every freshman is in one of two small learning communities, so they share a team of teachers, and they really get to know those teachers well, and they also get to know the students in their SLC very well. And then for sophomore, junior, senior years, they choose an academy, which is based more towards a subject area interest and future goal. There's the exploration and discovery, which is math, science, and technology. That's mine. And then global expressions is more history, communications, arts, theater, like that. And so you can see that even within that structure, there's an opportunity for advisories to be very designed to really suit their individual groups' needs as well.
So the Thunder Mountain program, it sounds like, is rather than being strictly an advisory advocate kind of program, that's a restructuring of the learning environment into these small learning communities We're not familiar with exactly how that's organized, but is that it's been much more broad throughout the reorganization of the school, the way the curriculum's presented, it sounds like. Is that correct?
I think advisory is aligned with Next Generation's plan also for academies and small learning communities, and it's all about personalization. You can have, I know that there are schools where they have advisories and they don't have small learning communities or academies, but there are some schools where they have an advisory period every day. There's some that meet just once a week. At this point, that's what it looks like at Thunder Mountain. We have a 45-minute advisory period once a week. Last semester, we even changed it between semesters. Last semester, it was an hour and 10 minutes. So we've adjusted the schedule a little bit as well. But and then there's some, I can't speak to what they're doing at JDHS, but I think they meet like once or twice a month. And so it really depends on what the students' needs are. But I love it because it's a unique opportunity to bring in guest speakers. And when we got our PSAT scores back, to have counselors come into every single class and go over that information, it's unwieldy. Or to have a special assembly or to rearrange a schedule. An advisory lets us have some built-in time for some special needs that arise.
And that is not just in like junior, senior, this is throughout the entire
It's throughout the whole high school. Although what we do find is there are some grade level specific needs that students have. For example, the juniors and seniors last year, we didn't have seniors last year. Our sophomores and juniors last year, it was a lot of career exploration, college prep. Let's find out some scholarships. Let's tap into some of our monies that are available and how can you access that, and helping students kind of think ahead to those plans out after high school.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that the four teachers plus another teacher, so that was five of you.
Mm-hmm.
When you did this, you mentioned that it was 2 weeks at a time, but if the classes only meet once a week, so that really you only had time to meet with them twice.
Well, for example, I was leading a session on writing resumes, and so on that Thursday afternoon, my cohort, my group of students, there were about 20 of them, would come to me, and we were in the lab, and we were looking at resumes, and they were kind of building their experience. Meanwhile, with Gretchen Kriegmont, who teaches history, they were talking about interview techniques, and what do you wear, and how do you present yourself, and shaking hands, and some of those fundamentals we take for granted that students know. And then some students were over with Kent Merrick, and they were doing college searches. And then the other students were with a science teacher, and he was bringing guest speakers from the community who employ our students and talking about how to complete a job application and the kinds of relevant information that our business owners are looking for our students. And so then after 2 weeks, they just rotated around. So within a 10-week period, they really had a thorough idea and understanding of what they would need to be presenting themselves to the community as job candidates.
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
So you're really, goal was to prepare them to be able to get jobs afterwards, and it wasn't so much, I'm just trying to think in my mind how you can build a relationship with individual students when you only see them twice. And so your job at this point, your goal was to help them be prepared after school.
Right, and we had a unique situation last year. It was our first year. We had only sophomores and juniors and no seniors. I taught every student in my academy, and so I already was building that relationship. We already have kind of a looping system built in at Thunder Mountain, so we have some that continuity, and we're already reaping the benefits of those close relationships begun last year and continued this year. But I know that that doesn't always work, and I know that as in our next year, we're going to have to consider how will we kind of catch those students to advisory becomes a chance, because right this year I don't teach all the students in our academy because we have we're pushing 200. Students, and next year we'll have about 235, and we'll have more teachers. But it is important, I think, for a successful advisory models to make sure that you have the staff commitment and those conversations in advance to establish the expectations and to establish the goals that you have and be unified in that. It does take a while to grow a group. You know, our sophomores and juniors who haven't experienced an advisory before, it's new to them, and if they wait long enough, you know, maybe it'll go away, it's always going to be different. But with this new group of freshmen last year and this year's sophomores, this is going to be an ongoing part of our school culture, and that's ultimately our success, will be our success as well, because that's when you really get to evaluate a program's success is over time.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Reverend Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming forward today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Trying to wrap my arms around what it is that you're doing in a way that I can relate. Trying to picture this in my mind as to the continuity. So, you know, during the course of a week, you know, students come in. What is the normal order of, you know, the day for students there, I was wondering, and how does this play into that? Say on a weekly basis. Could you give me that?
Do you mean in terms of like the, how is the schedule just arranged and do students know where to go in, or what does it look like?
I'm trying to figure out the logistics of what it is that you're doing. In other words, in a former life, many, many years ago, you'd come to school and you had a homeroom or whatever, and that's where your day started. And it started there and usually ended there.
I remember that.
Yeah,
I would like that too.
And I'm just trying to relate to, you know, do students arrive, they go to their first hour class, and is there some sort of an arrangement whereby your SLCs have some sort of, you know, meeting, or that they have a pre-arrangement for a schedule that they get together, or how does that work?
Oh, sure. So it's an actual scheduled-in class period during the day. So on Thursdays we go periods 1 and 2, and then we have our advisory time, and then it's lunchtime, and then we go back for periods 3 and 4 after lunch. So there's a scheduled time. What we did in our academy is, and again, there's lots of different ways you can do it. I remember when I was in the homeroom, you know, it was A through K. We chose in our advisory, we wanted a much more personal approach. And this quarter, and perhaps into the semester as well, the students chose, we had a whole bunch of kind of enrichment activities that we wanted students to get to kind of dip into, kind of like electives that would never be able to be electives because we wouldn't be able to get highly qualified teachers to do that, or there wouldn't be the funding to do it long term. But we had a whole menu of different activities students could choose from, and then they put basically assigned themselves to groups based on what their interests were. So, for example, Kent Merrick is teaching a digital photography class, and it just becomes like a little extra elective enrichment class. And that's just one example. I know some of the other, in the other academy, they're writing the literary magazine. We don't have a school newspaper, and this is an outlet for students who want to do creative writing, and they've published a little student magazine. So that's how they're using that time. So it's a way for us to, it is unusual, and again, I don't think it'll look anything like this next year. One of the things that, in transitioning Thunder Mountain High School, is we're exhausted. We've been working really hard like to create a whole new school, and we need the time this semester to come up with those agreements. But as an academy, our six core teachers said, what do our students need? What will be a valuable activity for them? And where can we also kind of share some alignment there in terms of linking back into standards? And what are students not getting now that we want them to have access to? And so that's how we devised this plan for having some enrichment activities. There's not a grade associated with it, for better or for worse. If there were, maybe that would invest a lot of students. But it's really about having an opportunity to do something fun and different and an enrichment that still gets a connection with a teacher.
And what has been your just unofficial assessment as the effect on students in your population of providing this kind of enrichment, you know, elective enrichment in the mechanism you've been doing it. I mean, not only have things been presented, but has it changed somewhat, do you think, the atmosphere of the school? Or do you see kids that might have been thinking about not necessarily staying in school? Do you see them more engaged, or is it just too soon to tell?
I think what we need is that how will we know when we get there? And because the advisory has been part of Next Generation and we are implementing it, I don't know that there is at this point, and maybe that's something I need to bring back to my staff, is how will we know if this is working, which is something I ask in my classroom all the time. Like, okay, what do students need to know? How will I know that they got there? And what will I do when they don't get there? And so we need some kind of a tool to assess. I know that students report having a real positive energy at school. They feel safe. But in terms of the quantifiable results of attendance or teacher, yes, more students graduate, I don't know that there's anything yet that we can point to advisories and say, yeah, that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Letting people know that we have members of our committee that had to go to other meetings. There's three scheduled at the same time that many of us are sitting on. So it's not that we're not interested in this subject. People are going to come back and can pick up the testimony individually off of the gavel to gavel, as well as our engagement. So thank you very much. Are there further questions?
Well,
Representative Booth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you refer to academy, and you've mentioned it probably 20 times.
Oh, I'm sorry. The curse of knowledge. I've already internalized it, and I
right.
forget that.
Could you sort of explore that a little bit more? Are you talking about groups of teachers? Are you talking about a school within a school? I mean, just exactly what is it that you're referring to?
Both. When I was in school, the traditional model, and I think, you know, for a lot of places it still looks like that, up until Thunder Mountain, education for me hadn't changed in 35 years as a student, and including 17 as a teacher. And what we're finding is the traditional model is archaic and doesn't work, if it ever really worked, for all students. And that's what we're trying to focus on. That's what we have to focus on right now is all students. And so what the new structures within schools are designed to increase personalization, to have every child be known to an adult somewhere during their day, but also to improve relationships among students. And so school climates improve, and we don't have disenfranchised groups or groups that feel isolated and alienated, because we know that those individuals really struggle and may drop out of school rather than stay and finish their educations, and that'll impact the rest of their lives. So at Thunder Mountain, we have two small learning communities, and those are for the freshmen. And so instead of all the freshmen being mixed up all day in the course of their schedules, there's a group of freshmen that have share a group of teachers, a cohort of teachers, and those teachers then can get together and talk about their students. And it's a way for us to very quickly get to know a lot of students efficiently and be able to address their needs and be able to make sure that they don't fall through the cracks. So that's what we have in place at Thunder Mountain, and it's been very successful. And it began at JDHS as well. 3 years ago, I was part of the first team of freshman teachers, and it was powerful, the conversations that we had about our students and the interventions that we could do on students' behalf, with all of the teachers and the parent and the child coming together and to say, we're here for you, we care about you, what can we do? Something that was difficult, if not impossible, to do in a traditional school model. When students are at the end of their freshman year, they, at Thunder Mountain, they choose an academy, and we designed the academies to align with some very general kind of career interests or subject area interests. I knew when I was in sixth grade that I loved reading and writing. That was just it for me. And I was really lucky in 7th and 8th grade to have a teacher who saw that fire and kind of started to guide me in a way that would get me to the place where I am right now. But for a lot of students, you don't have that kind of personalization, or you don't have that opportunity to really focus on a strand of courses that will align with what your future goals are. So we've identified through student surveys and through a lot of reading and research that there are kind of two schools of thought. There are the more the sciences, hard sciences, and then there are the more the creative and civic-minded areas. And that most careers will fall into one of the two of those, one of those general categories. So we designed an academy that's based on science, math, and technology, which means that even though I'm an English teacher, last year I partnered with the science teacher, and my American literature class, I tapped into his environmental biology class, and I threw out a bunch of stuff that wouldn't align, but that I knew would be more relevant for students. So bye-bye, Scarlet Letter. I love it so much. But I had to think, what will students who are my future engineers and technicians and computer programmers, what would they do with the Scarlet Letter? It was a stretch for me to justify the time and energy spent on that book. So instead, we read this nonfiction work called Shadow Divers, which is all about exploration and discovery and technology and earth sciences. And it was a history, mystery, and students loved it. They reported one of the highest success rates of students reading it and responding to it and retaining the material that I've ever had in my career. Plus, I was all excited because I got to team with a teacher instead of being locked alone in my classroom, which is the traditional model. You know, I'm in my classroom, I've got my kids, I got my book, it's all I can do to stay ahead of the grading. Now I've got a team of teachers, and we collaborate, we develop these projects that touched on all these different subjects areas and integrated them in a way that is real world. I don't go in my life from my history background to my English background to my science. It's all in there together, integrated. And those are the kinds of collaborations and projects that we teachers can have, which not only enriches students' experiences and their learning, but also teachers' knowledge and learning as well. So that's the academy model, and that's what small learning communities do. And does that help?
Mm-hmm. Representative Boo.
If I might, do we have a whole litany of people to be speaking? I don't want to take up all of the time if there's a bunch of people waiting.
Well, we have online, we have advisory programs from Kenai Peninsula and Kodiak Island Borough.
Right. Yes, so. I did have one comment that I'd like to make while you broached a subject that I was involved with for years, and that is team teaching. And, you know, unlike the traditional model of one class, one teacher, the opportunity that we had was that it brought different personalities to that same classroom and different styles, different techniques, sometimes different points of view. And I was just wondering if you would like to comment briefly on what your thoughts on that are.
On team teaching? As like two teachers in the same classroom, or
two, four, six,
okay,
doing all kinds of different creative things.
Sounds like that's what we're doing, right? I think it's a lot of the same thing. I think the difference is when you want four teachers to be collaborating, you have to have a structure in place that supports that. You need to. We found that it was powerful to have a shared group of students. We all taught all the students. As we transition and become a bigger school, that's going to be harder to do. But it also meant that we almost, it was necessary that we had shared planning time. So we used a lot of our own planning time. And but that was, we had to have the same class period to have our planning at the same time. So there are definitely some school structures that have to be in place to encourage that kind of collaboration. I've team taught in the past as well with a colleague of mine, and it was like, well, how about if we can both get our third hours together and our sixth hours together, that would be great, but nothing else really fits. And by the way, we don't share the same prep, so all of this planning we're doing, you know, like over drinks at the restaurant at night, and because it's all on our own time. So it's powerful to have teachers teaming and collaborating either to go back to their own classrooms and administer that, or to actually share classroom space and time, which I've done as well. But you have to have the structures in place that support that. Otherwise, it's just up to the teachers to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And a question on, it sounds to me like almost as much effect on the culture of the school of the students is probably the culture of the staff interrelation and teacher interrelations. Have all of the teachers been comfortable with this model, or did they come to this school because this was going to be the model, or can you just kind of relate to us how that works?
In my 17 years of teaching, this is the most dynamic, powerful experience I've ever had. And we came to Thunder Mountain because we wanted to do things differently. So what we have is an amazing, phenomenal support and willingness. We're comfortable with being uncomfortable because we know change is messy, and because we know that ultimately we challenge each other. And so we don't have the naysayers. We don't have people who are saying, well, this is why that won't work. We have people saying, well, let's get started and then we'll get better. And I feel very comfortable, you know, speaking on behalf of the staff, saying this is how we do things at Thunder Mountain.
Great, thanks. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So how, can you just tell me the differences, I mean, in the structure? Do the kids still go and are in a classroom and move, or do the kids stay in the same classroom and the teachers move? I mean, so that we can kind of in our heads get a grip on what is different.
Okay. The kids do move. You have to let them move. You know, they can only sit still so long. Last year, where we were much more of a, like that cohort of four when we were smaller, the students do move among the classes, but we did have our enrichment people coming in and team teaching. So that was what it looked like last year. We're still moving through. The students are still moving around. We would still look kind of in a traditional class or traditional school in that way, and how students are kind of moving around. But you'll start to notice that, like, Ms. Kriegman and I share almost all the same students, and they have mainly Mr. Lundquist as well. So you definitely see within that academy the same familiar faces, and you, I think, sense that as well.
And you know, we fully understand that these things aren't top-down. I mean, they have to be generated from the staff and a staff that's willing and all those things. But I think that several of us need to come out and see what you're doing.
That would be great. You're always welcome.
Okay. So I think that, you know, in the waning days of session, there may be some days. Hopefully we can come out and get your contact information, because I know that I would, and I'm seeing Representative Luke and Wilson all would like to come out and kind of integrate it and understand the, you know, the model that you've done, that you've gone to. You had said something earlier, I think it was on the model new.
Next generation? No.
What's that?
Next generation?
Yeah. Was that what it was? Next generation schools? Is it, or?
That was the district plan that was developed, I want to say, 5 years ago-ish, to anticipate the transition to being three high schools, Yakutsk, JDHS, and Thunder Mountain. But it was also looking ahead, and the result of a lot of research and exploration on the part of our the staff and the district, to recognize that to have a school system that still looks like it did 50 years ago is detrimental to everybody, all the stakeholders.
And as part of this academy structure, has that developed at Thunder Mountain, or was that part of the New Generation Schools?
It's part of the Next Generation. I think it's online. If you go to the district webpage, you can find all the information about Next Generation and the expectations and kind of the future movement of the district. And so it's available there.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Let's go to, where do we have, Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Are you online?
I'm here, Representative Stephen.
Thank you. And would you identify yourself on the record? And
sure. I'm Sean Dusick. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Instruction for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District.
Thank you, Sean. I hope you understand what we're trying to get at, a basic understanding of the different elements of and different organizations of advisor advocate programs across the state. We had an email from the district earlier that laid out basically, I think it was in the high schools, but it was six programs, three of which were individual oriented and the others were more class oriented. And could you go through and let us know the structure of the different advisory programs? Those were high school. I don't know whether you have any in the middle schools or elementaries as well. And then give us kind of a overview on the effectiveness of each one of those models and what they have found in implementation of those is what their successes or problems might be.
Okay, sure. We do have a couple of middle schools that also have advisory programs. I'll get into those in a second. The three schools that it's more of a personalization type advisory, they all meet every day for about 15 or 20 minutes, and they have a variety of activities to help students set personal goals. It gives a staff member an opportunity to really get to know a student, get to know their strengths and weaknesses, work with them if their grades are slipping a little bit, also is able to review any assessments that had taken place during the school year to help the student individually get to know what they mean. It's also a couple of the schools utilize the advisor to contact parents on a regular basis to see if there's any needs from a parent's point of view, just to check and see how things are going. So it really follows the National Association of Secondary School Principals recommendations of personalization. There is a advocate for every student in that school, which, by the way, is a NASSP program. They have a very detailed structure that's a great resource, lots of research on the impact of advisories over many, many years. So if you get a chance to take a look at that, I'd encourage you to do that.
And we haven't seen that. Can you send us the link to that?
Sure.
And then I'll distribute that to the committee. We could probably get it from the department here, but if you wouldn't mind, since you have it there.
I can certainly do that.
Great.
The advisories that meet daily, one of the problems, because of course no program is perfect, is that sometimes some of the staff members do view it as a kind of an extra class, and so all of these schools have set up activity books by grade level, and I believe all three schools that do this, they have monthly themes. So when these meetings are happening, the teacher can choose various activities that would fit within that theme. And we also are moving toward utilizing more of a career orientation, future planning. So all schools will have a uniform activity book that is focused on preparing for life after high school. And of course, you know, in ninth grade, it's more general. It's broader, just kind of getting a big picture, helping kids understand that in a very short period of time, they're going to be out there, and they need to start to think about it. And then, of course, when you're a senior, very focused on finalizing post-secondary plans, finding the money to help support those plans. If you're looking to get a job, working on, finding apprentice or school-to-work opportunities, those type of activities that's the whole gamut. So it starts very general as a freshman, still focused on getting to know the student's strengths and weaknesses so as we progress through the years, we can help them academically as well as prepare them for the future. And then, of course, seniors, very focused on the next step. The schools continually refine that program because it takes a lot of work to make it successful. There's been a tremendous amount of buy-in from the staff and the schools on getting to know the student and being their advocate, but we still have work to do on just some of the finer points in the activities that are meaningful to students and very easy for staff to implement. The other three schools, they're more of a rotating basis where they may have three or four teachers throughout the year. They do not necessarily meet every day during the week. They would meet maybe one school is 3 days a week, two schools are twice a week. And it is very much geared toward allowing students to explore their areas of interest in a class type setting. Now, if there are students that need remedial help, this is also an opportunity for them to get the additional help in certain subjects that we found through assessment data that they need specific help for. But they also utilize outside experts to come in. We do have, at one school I'm thinking of in particular, they have a welder from one of our welding companies out in the Kiski that'll come in once a week and work with students that are very in tune with welding and as they're working towards certification. We also will be taking advantage of those programs with employability skills. We use the APIC program. It's about a 10-hour online program that's available to students where you can get a 10-hour employability skills certification. It's just a very generic one, but at least students are being exposed to necessary skills, soft skills that they would need on the job, such as being on time, being respectful, learning the ins and outs of that they'll likely be a part of a drug testing program as they go out into the workforce, and just some of those soft skills that they're going to need, the problem solving, the critical thinking. Right now, Homer High School, they are looking and they're doing a very extensive study on the impact of what they're doing. They do meet three times a week. They call it Focus on Learning, the FOL program, and I do believe that they are working toward more of a structure that'll be meeting a little more often with the same advisor to get a little more of the personalization component in there. So the middle school, typically the advisory programs, that really is a middle school type concept of personalization, and it helps the transition between the elementary level where you have the same teacher for the vast majority of the day and you're moving into a situation where you're going to have several teachers during the day. The middle schools still try to have that advocate, and the high schools have seen the value and they've picked up on it. And the two middle schools that are utilizing the advisory, very similar to what the daily high school advisory is, and their activities that they have are more just what would be your areas of interest, what are your strengths academically as you pursue future electives at the high school level, and things like that, and also lots of discussion on how to handle bullying, how to say no in peer pressure type situations that bad decisions may lead to serious consequences. So that is some of the facets of those advisory programs.
Well, thank you. And I guess, from our previous discussions that you heard, a lot relates to staff acceptance or buy-in or integration or development of the programs. Have you gotten any information from the schools that have been doing either the personalization model or the you'd call that second model?
More of an academic focus
model. Have you gotten feedback from those as to the amount of staff discontent or excitement, I don't quite know how to say it, but about either or both of those models?
We have. It's interesting. I mean, it's like anything. The more training you provide, the more information that you provide, the more comfortable the staff will be with it. And we work very hard through our counselors at the high school level to make this as easy as possible for staff members to be able to implement. And like I say, the more successful programs that we have, they put a tremendous amount of effort, and they have a goal focus on personalization for students. Before the advisory was even started, the original goal or the vision was every student will be known and cared for at our school. And so you have that initial buy-in at the very beginning. Advisory is a vehicle to meet that goal. It takes a lot of effort on the backside, and as we move forward with one of our board goals is an individual learning plan for every student, advisory is becoming that vehicle to implement that. And we're going to be piloting that next year at several schools, and we're going to try to work our way into the elementary school as well. It will be, that individual learning plan is going to be future-oriented in that we're trying to start to prepare kids for after high school, after they're with us. But again, it's going to take a lot of training, a lot of work with staff, providing them some time if they need it to help prepare for this, because it does take a lot of work. Many of you have had 17-year-olds, 16, 17-year-olds, where when they come home, you say, hey, how'd your day go? And they say, oh, fine, and then that's it. Well, the same thing sometimes happens in an advisory classroom when a teacher asks the kid, hey, how did yesterday go in your classes? And they may say, fine, because they just don't want to talk. And so we do need to work with our staff to learn how to work with those type of conversations. And it really is going to take time and effort to develop that trust with that student so that they can open up and we can find their strengths and weaknesses a little bit at a deeper, meaningful level so that we can help them be prepared for their time after working with us.
Well, thank you. Do other members have questions? Representative Boot.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Sean. Really appreciate you willing to take the time today to talk to us. How long have you been implementing some of what you're trying to do as far as focus on learning and things like that?
It varies from school to school, but all of our high schools have had an advisory type program for at least 3 years now. And as I said, down in Homer, they are conducting right now a very comprehensive review. Surveys going out to parents, students, and staff, and they're really looking to modify it to fit everybody's needs. At Soldotna High School, they've been doing an advisory for about 6.5 years now, and it's been reviewed a couple of times. They have modified it somewhat, but they still meet every day. The activities, though, some of them are set, and they have taken a turn more toward, even though it's a 20-minute meeting, an academic focus in terms of really working with the students on homework and contact with home to make sure students are coming to school and getting their work done and really monitoring those grades. So we have revamped. We are in the process of trying to make it fairly standardized across the district with the individual learning plan concept, and we do have activities from a district level that we would like to see every student at every grade level do with a tracking system of the individual learning plan. We're hoping to get that ILP on electronic so that the information can be transferred between schools very easily, and the advisor teacher and administration and all other teachers can see exactly what student interests are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and what their goals and aspirations are.
Representative Book.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that some of these are in their infancy, but would you comment as to what your observations are of the ones that have been in place the longest?
It's interesting because my personal observation is students are very comfortable with it because they're able to make that personal connection. The academic type focused programs, because students are allowed to pursue their interests, things seem to be going well there because they have a voice in it, and we're trying to have that happen with the personalized ones as well, so it's not so teacher-driven. It's also a combination of student-driven and with various activities that we want to have in place so all students can be prepared. I have noticed, too, a side benefit is that the schools that are very focused on using their advisors as a home contact, that communication has gone up. Very few surprises are happening. Students seem to be achieving a little bit better, particularly in the classroom, because they do have somebody that cares about them and is pushing them to participate. But again, key factor in any advisory is it'll only be as good as the person leading it. And some advisories really rely on the students to lead it, and that a lot of times is a good thing, but sometimes there's not that facilitation from the adult, so it's not as good as it could be. And that's just some of the personal observations that I'd have.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. From what I'm hearing you, it's probably a little bit like in any other industry. The people that are excited and really, and I'm talking about teachers now, it's so individualized because of the teacher that some teachers do exceptionally well in those areas, and some teachers it's a little difficult for them. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it is, and I think really what it boiled down to when I was at Soldaten High School, it was a comfort level. And as soon as you started to work with teachers on facilitating those type of conversations, because high school teachers are content specialists, and if you're a math teacher, you're really into math, and you're focused on that, and that's your passion, and that's your love, sometimes that's not conducive to a discussion on drug use.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you work with the staff and you do some role-playing in your staff meetings and you give the teachers an opportunity to talk about, well, this is a conversation that I had and this is how I handled it, and everybody can talk about, you know, well, you know, how did that go, how did that work, then people become a little more comfortable. And, you know, that's not to say that every situation you can role-play, but really, it's just the idea of the more comfortable you get in the one-on-one role, and all teachers, I believe, really care about their students, and it's just a matter of helping them show that to the student. And sometimes teachers will say, well, you know, I love these students. How come they're not getting it? Well, you know, how are you showing that? And then we can work through that and help them just be a little bit more personal with it. But it is. It's a matter of, you know, how much effort you're willing to put into it. And I'd have to say that we have a lot of effort going into it, but we still have hit and miss. And we're working on that.
Thank you.
Representative Booth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Dusick, I was wondering if in the district that you oversee, do they have some optional application of team teaching in some of the within some of the schools there?
We are well on our way into a collaboration initiative in our district. We are working very, very hard to find time for teachers to work together. We right now are at the point where we're trying to find those areas of excellence and grow them. Right now we have a group of teachers that in world history are actually video conferencing across three schools. And they've asked for some time to be able to work together to do joint lessons and things like that. We work very hard to provide that for them. We have other cross-curricular type projects that are going on. We're taking a very close look at, they call it STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. And both of our largest middle schools, Keenan Middle and Soldotna Middle, are very focused on that concept, which is two teachers are working together in science, technology, and math, and they're trying to have engineering projects integrated within both classrooms with a similar group of students so that there's an application of the theory of math and the theory of science. So we're on that road. Do we have anything completely formalized at this point? No. But we do recognize that collaboration amongst teachers is a very powerful mechanism to move students to the next level. And it has to be structured. It can't be just talking about, you know, discipline or the problems of students all the time. It has to talk about using data to improve student weaknesses. It also has to be frank discussions on improving individual instruction. And so we're well on that path. We're having several schools submit plans on really taking that collaboration initiative to the next level, but we're not as far as some other schools and districts.
Okay, and a follow-up, Representative Book.
Thanks. On a slightly different point, you know, the whole idea behind what we're, I think, trying to initiate here is greater parent involvement, especially at earlier ages. Is there anything in particular that you have seen work there, or do you see that there's any change in that? Is there any indicators out there that you're getting more involvement with your parents?
At the elementary level, our focus is really to get the parents in the door the first time, and our administration and our teachers work very, very hard to make sure that initial meeting is as positive as possible, and we try to show how much we value them and their partnership. And there's lots of activities that I know many schools around the state do, you know, the after-school literacy fairs, the reading nights, the math nights, that really are an effort to help teach parents some skills to help their child at home so that we can develop that partnership. As far as the advisory impact, that is the value that I've seen in particular at one school, is that the advisors have taken on the role of making contact at home with positives, not just the negative contacts that sometimes we fall into that trap of. And just based on, you know, the informal observation, they seem to have a little more participation at the high school level. So, you know, so instead of a 50% parent-teacher conference rate, they have about an 80% participation rate in that. So there are some benefits, and of course the school is a little bit smaller, but we're hoping that can translate over into some of our larger schools.
Thank you.
Thanks. And I guess one final question. As the district moves with its teacher hiring policies, do you look to the skills that teachers bring in this area as well as their strictly academic skills, and to see if they would integrate well with a school that is having an intense advisory program?
Well, yeah, we ask every teacher how they're going to meet the needs of an individual student. and we're really looking for answers that speak to the whole child, not just, well, I'm gonna give them an additional 15 minutes after school to work on their homework, those type of things. We're looking at, I'm gonna utilize some data to work with an individual student on very fine points of weaknesses. I'm also gonna be in regular contact with home to try to cultivate that partnership. And we also do talk about how teachers need to make that personal connection with a student. It's beyond the academic strengths and weaknesses. It's the other interests, it's the goals, it's the aspirations, and how we can push those students along to realize those dreams. And those are, I've seen on many, many interview questions for teachers, that I'd say 99% of them include at least one or two questions about that, and it carries a lot of weight with our administrators, because that is a focus for us, is personalizing education and meeting the individual learner's needs.
Well, great, thanks. And I'd just like to relate to you, because when I was over in Seward, I was asking folks over there, and I think that they had a one time per week, and the students thought it was just disruptive, didn't like it, and then they had changed that model to a 2 day per week, and they said it was working well. So just to pass that along to you, that and you may not have heard that from the student perspective over there, or you may have, but anyway, thank you very much, and we'll be contacting you later on as we try and put together this report of advisor programs, pluses and minuses, and effectivenesses across the state this summer. So thank you very much, Sean, for calling in. Let's go to the Kenai Kodiak. Are you online, Kodiak?
Yes, I am.
Good afternoon, or morning here it still is. Yeah, we're getting lost in this last week down here, whether it's day or night. Would you identify yourself for the record, and then go ahead and offer us your testimony?
Absolutely, yes. Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about advisory, Representative Deaton. My name is Bill Watkins, and I'm the principal here at Kodiak High School. And it's been a pleasure listening to the other leaders from Juneau and from Kenai, listening to their programs. I've been taking a few notes here myself. I've been at Kodiak High School. This is now my third year, and I was fortunate to come on board during the year when we were getting ready to go through an accreditation. And when you go through an accreditation, you have to look at a lot of data, and you compare your existing program to the quality criteria standards for accreditation. And then you identify some strengths and some weaknesses, and you put in some improvement plans to help strengthen those weaknesses that you have. We looked at some of the data we looked at were our seniors that are graduating with a plan, actually knowing what they're going to do beyond high school. We looked at the number of students who we felt were at risk, and when we say at risk of graduating, it means that they're already behind in credit or there's attendance issues. Those are the two main factors. And we also looked at some of the results from our school climate and connectedness survey to find out how many of our students felt that they had caring adults or that teachers really cared for them, that they were connected to the school. So we found a few problems there, and we wanted to address that, obviously, with a solution. And one of the solutions that we came up with after some research was that perhaps we should look at putting an advisory plan in place where every student has at least one adult in this building that they know they can go to and get some advice and get some help and support from. And ideally, we believe that every student has to have at least five caring adults in their life. And so the conversations took place, well, what are the counselor's roles? Well, we have three counselors and we have about 800 students, and certainly if you divide 800 students by three counselors, that every counselor would have, approximately 270 students that they would be responsible for, and that just doesn't make a lot of sense. And so what we did, the next step is we, after we looked at the roles of advisory and what we wanted to do with our students. We felt that if we could bring students in their freshman year and actually take them through some career interest surveys and look at the different course offerings that we have, that the different courses they need to take to pursue some of those careers beyond high school, begin building a career portfolio with them. Kids could start graduating from Kodiak High School and have a well-defined plan. But we identify what would the counselor's role be in this and what would the advisor's role be in this. And actually, I sent a document to you. I don't know if you have that in your hand, but we actually listed the roles of the counselor would have individual meetings with students. They would be responsible for the initial four-year plan development with those students. They would, of course, discuss future career plans with those students. They would discuss college choices or other training options. The advisor would have weekly meetings with those students, and each advisor would have anywhere from 10 to 12 students maximum, and they would be with those students for the 4 years that they're in high school. So this year, for example, our advisors that have seniors, they will go to graduation and watch them graduate and be part of that graduation ceremony, and then they'll go back and pick up a group of freshmen next year and follow them through the next 4 years. The advisor also, during those weekly meetings, would constantly review the students' four-year plans. They would do graduation requirement checks, look at their grades consistently. They give them and discuss information about career trends, personal relationships that they're having, some of the soft skills they need to have, employability skills training, etc. And so all of that information goes into developing a what we call the career portfolio, which is really an 8-year plan, because they're planning not only for their 4 years of high school, but also 4 years beyond high school. This year, for example, we have students help us develop our master schedule. So as early as November, through our advisory, we have students, they're looking at the courses that they need to take that align with the career of interest they're trying to pursue beyond high school. And if we don't offer those courses, we need to be offering those courses. So what we have students do, actually, is we call them course request surveys. And we list a number of courses that we're currently offering. They also have an opportunity to list additional courses they feel they need in order to pursue the career of interest. We get that information back. And if we have enough interest in certain courses, we actually put that on their course request form. And when they fill, then they go to an advisory. It's usually in January. They actually begin filling out the courses they need to take for the following year. And we use that information to build our master schedule for next year. So all year long, they're involved in looking at not only their current grades and how they're doing in their classrooms, but they're thinking ahead as well. And they're actually helping us develop the master schedule of thinking about classes they need to take. And so it's really career-oriented for the most part. We build flexibility into it. We try to give our students as much leadership as possible. Some of you may have heard that our student council is very active at the latest OSUG conference in pushing forward a 4-day school week. That's of extreme interest here community-wide right now, and we're going to use one of our advisories here. We'll extend the length of that advisory, which is normally 30 minutes. We'll extend it to an hour on that particular day, and we'll do a school-wide presentation so that the student council can actually present the pros and cons of a 4-day school week to the whole student body. So we do it once a week. Right now, there is some talk about extending that into 2 times a week, and we use student input, we use teacher input. There's been some pros and cons of the value of advisory, especially the first year of implementation. I think now we're at the point where everybody realizes it's a stable program. It's very beneficial for our students. We have seniors graduating with well-defined plans. We've looked at the results of our school climate and connected this survey, and it seems like students are feeling more connected to our school, and they're leaving more prepared for careers beyond high school. The other thing that we've implemented through our advisory is the Career Ready 101, and that is associated with the Work Keys assessment and the Key Train that some of you may have heard of. We are using that extensively in at Kodiak here, both at our high school and our village schools, and in our alternative program. It's called the Learning Cafe, and that gives us a lot of information about students, where they sit as far as applied math, reading for information, locating information, and also some of their interests and their employability skills, what employability skills they currently have in moving forward. So we use a lot of that information for academic placement, for example, and also to help connect those kids to careers that they may want to pursue in the future. And I'd like to say, hearing Thunder Mountain's presentation, I'd like to say that we too are moving towards an academy approach, and we've wanted to move in that direction for quite some time, but we have some physical and space challenges here at the high school that's prevented us from moving towards the academy's approach. Now that we have passed a bond for a new and renovated high school, that high school is designed with flexibility in mind so that we can have academies, and we're looking at health science academies, natural resource academy, engineering and manufacturing, social science, and arts, performing arts. So we're very excited about that, and we hope the new school will come on board in 3 years, and that's what we're planning for right now, is when that school opens, that we'll have those academies in place, and perhaps the structure of our advisory will change a bit as well.
Thanks, Bill. And by the way, we have not received that email. So if you could resend it, something got lost in the the wires, the series of tubes, or whatever we want to say. Anyway, we are here looking at these different ones. Are you finding that also the question I asked in Kenai, that you are looking to different skill sets in hiring teachers than you used to, or looking at additional skill sets that are necessary to accomplish the goals in your school?
Well, you know, I part of our interviewing process is to identify how incoming teachers develop positive relationships with students. And so that's always been very, very important to us. And beyond just teaching the content, we know that you need to have that information. You need to be very solid in your content, but you also have to understand how to develop positive relationships with students. And so that's always been very, very important with us in our hiring process.
And you're not seeing a need to change an emphasis by incorporating more advisory program, or is that more of an emphasis placed on that in the hiring process?
You mean as far as people coming prepared for training, how to work with students in advisory, or maybe some background in counseling, et cetera, to develop those positive relationships? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, and I guess also just in the attitude. I mean, I know when I taught, there were teachers that were engaged in personal conversations with students and personal attitudes, and there were others that took, shall we call them, at that time it was extracurricular assignments with great reluctance. And so I'm just wondering whether with this change to an looking at more of this advisor role, advocacy role, whether that is something that you're identifying, that there are skill sets and attitudes that you have to look for in teachers that you would be looking to hire.
Yes, I believe that, you know, there's lots of different personalities out there when you hire teachers, but it's also we don't expect the teachers to come in with all the skill sets. We do have professional development opportunities for them, and we do expect them to take part in those professional development opportunities. And what we found putting the advisory program in place is that it forced a better relationship between our counselors and the advisors. They now discuss different methodologies to use in the different lessons that we have in advisory and how to create those positive relationships. We, during our early release days, we oftentimes have discussions about what worked real well, what didn't work so well, how can you get kids to open up and have better conversations about certain topics, what's working well for some teachers, what's not working so well for other teachers. And so we're finding more of a teaming of our teachers now. They're actually talking about the advisory and what's worked well, what hasn't. The other thing that we found from this is that, I know someone asked about, gee, you only meet with them, you know, once a week. Is that really enough? What we found is that our advisors, since they have 10 or 12 students, as they walk through the halls, they're seeing these kids in the halls, and they're connecting with them every single day now, just asking how their day is going, or maybe they saw something, they saw that their grades were slipping, and they're asking what they're doing about that, or just a pat in the back because they saw them participate in a basketball game or something. So it's gone beyond just the one day that they meet. It's any time they see these students in the community or walking in the halls as well.
Great. And that, again, your program was that they're connected with those students for the their full career in the high school.
And yes, that's correct.
And we were talking about graduation, and they participate in the graduation. The 10 or 12 students that they have, those are going to be a mix of different classes, right? So you may have three or four or five seniors and three or four or five freshmen. I mean, is that correct, or is it?
No, they'll start, for example, we'll have a cohort of freshmen, what we call freshman advisory teachers this year, and then next year there'll be sophomore advisory teachers, and the year after that there'll be junior advisory and then senior advisory. So they bring those students, same grade level, on board, and they stay with those same students for 4 years.
Okay, and as new students come in, they're assigned to one of those advisors. Is that correct?
Yes.
And do you have much where somebody's going to be with them for those 4 years? If personalities don't work out, as you know, sometimes is just the case. do you have a mechanism in place, or is it informal, where you can have a kind of a transfer or something like that, or is that just how is that accomplished, or is it accomplished?
No, they'll usually go to their counselor and say this is not working, and or the teacher will go to the counselor sometimes, say it's not working. We're just having a conflict, and we'll make changes and we'll make adjustments in those situations.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was curious how that worked. Representative Book, and then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Principal Watkins. Some of what you're describing here is very labor intensive. I was wondering if I understand that this is a relatively new opportunity for you, 3 years or so. Have you thought about, or has there been some interest in incorporating some volunteers into this mechanism where perhaps some senior citizens or retired teachers or parents in the community could be utilized in the interest of caretaking for these students?
You mean participating as actually having their own group, an advisory group, or just working with the advisors?
Either.
Okay, we do have a lot of parents that come in during advisory, and they do volunteer their time in the school and with certain advisors in our program right now. And so I guess what I'm saying, the door is definitely open for that kind of participation.
Right. Through the chair, there's a difference between saying they're welcome and going out there and soliciting people in the community whether it's a poster at the grocery store or whether it's an invite to you know, come into the community, as far as the school is concerned, you know, I'm sure people understand that they're not going to be shunned, but there's a total difference as far as outreach is concerned. And I just was curious as to if there had been any of that there.
Yeah, I understand. I don't think that we've done the kind of outreach, because it is still fairly new to us as well, and I don't think we've done the extent of outreach that you're talking about right now. We do have partners with the local job service, and they've come in many times during advisory to help with the employability skills training. We have partnerships with Providence Hospital Safe Harbor, and they've come in to do presentations regarding drug abuse and counseling and et cetera. So those kinds of official partnerships, we've brought in people, but we haven't gone to the extent where we're really doing the kind of outreach that you're talking about, where we can get senior citizens and some of those others who would like to come to the school but need that real personal invite. And that's a good idea.
Representative Wilson, did you hit?
I forgot what it was.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bill. Appreciate it. And if you'll send that by email, we'll look forward to it. And then, like I say, we're going to have a project this summer trying to coordinate all this so that there'll be a presentation so that we can actually present a report to the legislature next year. And so this is going to be an interim project that we're going to undertake. And so if that's okay, we'll probably make some contact with you for additional information this over the interim.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks again. Let's see, we had the superintendent had to leave, I think, of Juneau School District. Is he? He's here. He had to leave. Okay, so we have Cynthia Kern. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Seaton, Representative Boot. My name is Cynthia Curran, and I'm the Director for Teaching and Learning Support at the Department of Education and Early Development. Where to start? As you know, the graduation working group has been meeting throughout the year. I briefed the committee in January on efforts to date. We will be meeting again next week, and then probably again in June, to discuss more of the issues. Some of the things that have been brought up today, I did want to let you know about a couple of things that the committee is going to be looking in depth at, one of which is transitions between middle school and high school, because of the importance of getting a good start in high school. As a former elementary teacher, you know, if the world was run like an elementary school, yay. So we will be doing some research around different kinds of transition models that may be in place around the country, see what we have going on in Alaska, and then find a vehicle to get the information out to school district personnel. One of the things that I have heard over and over again today was talking about staff and advisories. In the research that I've done, which you can imagine has been very enlightening, you either have a successful program because everyone shares the mission and buys in, or it's laid upon a staff. So you can imagine the successful ones, everyone has determined this is where we want to go. And there has been staff development for folks, because this isn't something that you come out of teacher preparation ready to know how to do. And I know that Chair Seaton has asked a couple of questions about, as districts are looking for new teachers, are they asking the kinds of questions that would lead to hiring folks who are ready to take on this added responsibility? So it's very important that you have a plan for implementing student advisories. And as you can imagine, there are quite a few models. They can just be school-based models where it's just the teachers and the principals and whoever else is in a building with an advisory group. There are models that encourage community participation and bring in folks from business, industry, service agencies to work with the students. So we're looking into what the different kinds of models are for the advisory. I believe it was Sean talked about the National Middle School Association and that this was a middle school model. The research that I've been doing has shown that that's where it originated. And if you remember back to when the middle school model itself was being promulgated in our state, the purpose was to create a smaller community for students to be able to interact with fewer teachers. Because the thought was if they were in the smaller learning community, that they'd be able to connect with somebody and feel like they made somebody cared whether they went to school or not and were in the building. And as you know, with shrinking budgets, schools have gone back more to a junior high school model where rather than the teachers teaming together and having a collaborative planning time, you have your, you know, period 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and ne'er the twain shall meet. So that's an interesting byproduct of where we were with middle schools. The Middle School Association nationally has looked into middle school partnerships. I'll be able to give you more information as we do the research over the summer, but to the National Middle School Association and the American Student Achievement Institute has information on how to start advisories, and they've broken it down into a process. So looking at that.
Representative Boot.
Mr. Chairman, did you want me to reserve my questions until after testimony, or?
I think we're very flexible.
And, I mean, all and two of us here, we're yeah. able to work through this, you think?
And the one thing is, what we would like you to do is forward that material to us.
Sure.
Or at least reference to us, so we're not just trying to scribble down and go find later.
I would.
If I might, Mr. Chairman. The structure of the middle school, we've vacillated in this state between 7th and 8th grade, 6th, 7th, and 8th. You know, some of the discussions we've had over the last year look at the difference in development of especially a sixth grader, where, you know, they grow exponentially. Seems to be, along with that growth spurt at that time, is also a certain intellectual expansion. So the separation between, you know, the kindergarten at this time through sixth grade, there seems to be, from what I've heard and can detect, an inclination to put those in with the seventh and eighth graders for that reason, because of size, because of a growth, because of things being more cohesive if you put those three together. Where do you think we're going to go, or where do you see the impetus currently?
Through the chair, Representative Book. As we look at what's happening in various places with middle school, what typically happens with sixth grade is that it is a couple of teachers, a group of sixth graders is assigned to, say, two teachers. One would do math, science, another would do the language arts and social studies, and then they would change off so that the students have that connection in sixth grade with those two people, and then they have what euphemistically referred to as specials, or what we used to call electives, so that the students would be able to grow in different areas. Then in seventh and eighth grade, depending on the school, could move move more toward your typical junior high school model. In some places, I heard reference to smaller learning communities, academies. It depends on the philosophy of the building. So I know that I was told from someone in Anchorage that, well, sometimes it's a K through 6, sometimes it's a 6, 7, 8, sometimes it's a 7, 8. I don't think there's a cohesive model that we're using at this point in time, and I don't know where we're going to go with that.
Right. If I might
Representative Boot?
I can speak to what I've seen in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And in Anchorage, what they've come up with that seems to work there is a footprint for elementary school size, construction, shape, look, that seems to be not only acceptable to the community, but also to the students and faculty. So, you know, we've sort of come together there in Anchorage with a model for the elementary schools, as far as the schools are concerned. But when you're talking about putting together a middle school and, you know, you're really trying to figure out which grades to include in that, it's critical that that be incorporated before the school's built. So, you know, in trying to align some of the financial arrangements, I'm just trying to ask if, you know, 10 or 12 years down the road, where we're going to be. Are we going to have to be remodeling a lot of these, you know, junior high schools that we're building now? Or, you know, are we going to go into a different sort of a format for that? And I'm just real curious as to, you know, how we can start looking down the road in that direction.
Through the chair, Representative Book, I can speak to what happened in Mat-Su when we were looking at moving toward middle schools, and a couple of the schools were built on a specific, I don't want to say a pod-like structure because that gets a little too spacey, but where they were built so that groups could team. And then the issue was when they had to move back to a more junior high school model, figuring out how to do all the movement and that sort of thing. So when a community decides what it wants, and we as a state have local control, and communities decide what they want with their schools, then the community comes together and says, this is what we want for our students. This is the footprint, if you would, of the school that we want to build. Palmer Junior Middle School was built as a junior high school. There was some remodeling done, not a lot, but it functioned as a middle school even though it was built as a junior high school. So those things can be done without having to completely remodel a building. If you will, it's like a mindset. We're going to be a team. And granted, I may have to walk a few more steps to get to my team, but this is our philosophy and this is where we're going.
Thanks, Cindy. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, that's covered part of the staff idea that we've had. One thing that has been expressed through us was that there's a lack of information transfer from either elementary to middle school or from middle school to high school, and so you come in with these students and you have to learn all the lessons all over again because there's nothing there is nothing that goes other than a transcript that doesn't have much information on it besides grades. There's all that loss of information on those students. Are you looking at that as well in this advisory program? I mean, obviously the advisors are going to figure out these kids. I mean, and it doesn't matter which kid, mm-hmm. but they're going to figure out you know, where students are. So the question is, if we have advisor programs in elementary and middle and high school, are we going to have these barriers, these walls, so that there's no transfer of knowledge or are we going to integrate transfer of this knowledge base that is probably way more important than the what grade the student got in, you know, on a certain subject. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to throw that out there for the consideration. I know we're going to be, I think that we really need to look at that if we want to see the maximum effectiveness of being able to take advisory programs and the knowledge base generated by an advisory program for a student through their career. So anyway, I just wanted to put that into the mix.
Chair Seaton, in many districts, when there are feeder schools into a middle school or a junior high school, so that I could speak to Matsu once again, because that's where I taught forever, the teachers from the elementary school would meet with the staff from the middle school regarding the students that were moving forward. I don't, since I taught the lower grades, I'm not sure exactly what those conversations were, but to give them an idea of who's coming in to their sixth grades. So there is somewhat of that conversation. I'll be sure to bring up your point to the committee to look at a transfer of knowledge between the groups as we work this summer.
Okay, thanks. And we'll be in contact with you as well, because like I say, we have an intern that's going to be working on collaborating mm-hmm. research and evidence. And so if there's anything further that you want to forward to us, this is not something that's going to wait until the next education committee in the next legislature. So we will be doing a report to the legislature. Is there anything further you want to add, Jen?
Chair Seaton, I did want to let you all know that we just recently had a middle school partnership meeting in Anchorage. There were representatives, principals, parents from four school districts from Fairbanks, Anchorage, Bering Strait, and Lower Yukon to learn about a pilot project for providing mentors in middle schools. This project had various agencies. The conversation was around what makes a successful middle schooler and what do we need to do to support that. How can we engage community resources to help us support it? There may be a grant that the group can write to provide an AmeriCorps volunteer, which I found out doesn't really mean volunteer. It is paid, they're paid a very small stipend for being in the schools. And they would work with the staff to try to take the onus off of the staff having to create these relationships to work with the folks who want to help out to start the mentoring programs. So
that'd be great. And if you need a letter of support from the education committee, you know, I'll talk to the other members, and we would I believe be happy to do that. We've got the majority of members right here right now that are nodding our heads that we would support that.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Unanimous so far.
Unanimous.
And just to remind you that the Career and Technical Education Plan does have a provision in it where students would have a plan that would be revisited every year so that they would know there would be benchmarks. And it would be so that the student would have an eye on the prize. You know, what am I going to do after I get through with high school? So that getting through with high school is no longer an option. I need to do that to go further and meet my goals. So that's where we are.
Great. And Representative Booth?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that point, and that those conversations start when?
Sixth grade.
And that was quiet. Was that sixth grade?
Oh, sixth grade. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
So,
Representative Boone.
So, the conversations with the parents, with the planning, with the mentorship, with all of these things, really as sort of step back maybe a year or two, so that in sixth grade we're having conversations with these kids about their futures?
Through the chair, Representative Book, throughout elementary school, spend a lot of time talking about what you want to be when you grow up. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be carried forward so that you realize what it is you need to do to meet your goals. You can't wait until high school to determine what you need to do, because you may have missed some opportunities along the way. Speaking of my own precious son, in high school it was like fighting to get him to do the things, and as an adult he finally said to me, Mom, you were right. I should have done X, Y, and Z. So even the most supportive parents need help from the schools to do things so that everyone's working toward the same goal.
I might follow up.
Representative Book.
Exactly my point. And that is that in pre-K, in those, you know, those years prior to sixth grade, without the introduction of what those kinds of things are, those kids don't have the opportunity to know what's out there. And my point has been throughout the course of this last year to emphasize the fact that we need to introduce what is available out there to these children along all the lines that are available. Academia, career technical, all of the kinds of things that, that, you know, we're looking forward to enhance in this state to keep these kids here so that they understand what is available. So that's the point I'm trying to hammer home, is that all of the core stuff that we give them is a basis for what they're going to do in order to be successful in life. And without that introduction to what is available out there, all we're doing is trying to give them rote learning for those core issues. I think we need to do better than that.
Thank you, Representative Book. And I just wanted to note for the record that we have emails from Kenai. We have email from Mike Henry, and email from Ford Slack, and so from Delta Greeley School District in our packets, and appreciate those folks getting back to us. And if there's additional information that any districts can provide us in writing, that's fine. I wanted to say that I do not anticipate any other meetings of House Education this year, but we're never sure until things end. So at that, we're going
to wait before you gavel out. Before you gavel out,
Representative,
I want that in writing.
We don't anticipate, is what I said, Representative Book.
What
and
about
it, and it is
before you gavel out? Are we going to have some interim meetings that are going to be scheduled, and that some of the people online would like to be forwarded notices about?
People can contact my office. We will, of course, make all of those public. I presume that we will have some meetings, both of education and you know, other committees. And we have a list in our regular education email list. And so any meetings that we schedule, we will definitely send out an email to everyone on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, we will be adjourned at 9:56.